Welcome to episode 15 of Social and Sport. This week, I'm delighted to be joined by a fellow podcaster and one of the most well-known Aussies within the digital sports space. Sean Callanan is the founder of SportsGeek, a digital consultancy based in Melbourne, but is possibly better known over here for his SportsGeek podcast. With over 300 episodes now and 500,000 downloads, it's fair to say he's spoken to everyone you need to hear from. Not only that, but he's an esports team owner with Gravitas, securing a position in the Oceanic Pro League that includes 8 top-tier League of Legends pros esports teams. So who better to chew the fat with on the latest goings-on within our business? You'll definitely enjoy this fast-paced look at what's been going on in sports over the recent weeks, from esports to the NRL, and sports biz Zoom calls to driving revenue through digital. Loads to get through, so here's my chat with Sean, recorded on Tuesday, 2nd of June, 2020. Cheers for joining me, Sean.
No problems. Yes, not so lovely. It's a bit more like London weather today. First day of winter, we're recording it.
What do you mean, London weather? It's lovely, sunny, 25 degrees today.
Yes, I know. It's not, but the weather out there isn't the greatest today because we're just starting winter.
Nah, but NRL was back at the weekend, yeah? So some reasons to look optimistic.
Yeah. So sport is starting to return. The NRL returned this week with no fans in the stands, fake crowd noise, but relatively successful. Record numbers, obviously. It's the only live sport that's on in town, so you're going to get record ratings.
Yeah.
So it's exciting that sport's starting to come back. AFL is 10 days away now. Netball has just announced that it's going to come back. So, yeah, fingers crossed. There's even talk that maybe fans will actually be in the stadiums sometime in 2020.
Fingers crossed. I don't know how likely that's going to be, but you never know. I did see one little bit that some of the cardboard cutouts didn't work as planned and wasn't vetted as well as it could have been.
Yeah, well, that's always going to be an issue.
And there's always someone takes up on it.
Sense of humour. Yeah. So I think they'll be under more scrutiny of the next couple of rounds.
Yeah. But I mean, looking back the last couple of months, how has it been over there? Because I mean, in terms of, you know, the actual kind of infections and deaths over in Australia, you kind of got away with it, really. There's not been that much. 7,000 cases, 100 deaths.
It's the advantage of living on an island. I think it's both Australia and New Zealand have done a really good job of taking the necessary precautions and obviously closing the borders and probably locking down more cautiously than they maybe had to. But, you know, looking at what was happening in Italy at the time and started happening in the US, it sort of seems like we've made the right decision. Now that we're starting to open up and letting people out and, you know, cafes and restaurants starting opening, you know, the fingers crossed that we don't get that second wave. But at the moment, yeah, touch wood, it seems to be, we seem to be doing okay.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I mean, one of the things I've been talking to people on this has been, you know, how sports has been coping and also the kind of content that people have been putting out. Because obviously you've been planning for weeks, months for, okay, the kind of climax of the seasons or the start of the seasons. Yep. And here's the kind of content we're going to be doing. And suddenly tear that piece of paper up, throw that out the window. Okay, what do we do now? We can't carry on with the same tone. What's the kind of reaction being over there? And also with the people you've been interviewing.
Yeah, so it's been a strange one. Like early on, when sports was stopped, so the sports are in season, whether it's here or even, you know, Premier League and the NBA, the NHL, when they all stopped, all the people that were in season sort of got into this bit of, well, mad panic is a bit wrong, but like they didn't know what to do because it wasn't like a regular season because they were meant to be having games and they were just on the normal treadmill. And so there was a little bit of over-servicing and over-delivery of content, which when fans were sort of in this weird space of what is this, they actually liked it. They consumed a lot of it. But then a couple of weeks in, it's, you know, we started finishing Netflix and everyone had seen Tiger King and there was a bit of fatigue on that. And so in the last couple of weeks, it sort of settled down a little bit. But there was that mad panic early, both to we've got to do content. And to a certain degree, it was even sports that weren't that weren't stopped. Like we were seeing sports are in their off season. We're also doing, oh, we're going to do a classic replay from a game from 1983. It's like, well, hang on, why are you guys doing it? You guys aren't, there's not a stop in the season for you. But everyone got caught up in, oh, that's a good idea. Maybe we should do it. So there was a lot of content. And then there was a bit of panic around how are we going to service our sponsors with, you know, assets going away. So there was that sort of phase. And then as we're starting to ramp up, now people are starting to look at, well, what does the content plan look like as we're coming back? How do we engage fans? How do we get them excited knowing that they can't go to the game? So it's been literally a roller coaster for a lot of the digital staff running the teams, and because it's you can't go to your pandemic playbook because it hasn't happened before.
No. I mean, what kind of things have you seen that's worked well, that's maybe a little bit different from those classic matches that everyone has been doing, which has worked well with, you know, archive, everyone's got, it's easy to go for, but other things maybe takes a little bit more time to think about.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of everyone doing the same thing. So everyone did a quarantine house, and that again, it worked because it was getting the fans involved. But I think then it's sort of been, I guess, starting to bring back, you know, now that we're, you know, the toughest bit was when there was no players. And so the players were either staying at home and working from home. And that was a really tough thing for the digital teams to be able to produce content, because it's much easier to point a camera at a player kicking a ball, shooting a hoop, that kind of thing. So now that they've, you know, they've come back to training, there's a bit of normalcy coming back to the content. And I think the other thing is just doing a bit more listening of what the fans, and trying to get them as a bit more involved. I think we've sort of gone back to, you know, back to the future, a certain degree of replying to fans, engaging fans a little bit more, because it's going to be really important over the next 6 to 12 months.
Mm. Is those kind of things you think ones will sort of stick? It's almost being kind of like, okay, we need to reset a little bit. You know, we need to concentrate more on our community, and we need to get involved a bit more rather than just broadcasting to them all the time.
Well, it sort of has to happen because, you know, I know I've been part of it and you've done the same. Like advising teams, their whole strategy has been around how do we get the cheeks in the seats? How do we get people to a stadium? How do we tell them, oh, it's on the telly now, watch it on the telly. Whereas now they're not being able to go to the game, and we're not selling a ticket and those kind of things. So I'm going to be really interested in how, like, game day, you know, social and content is going to be different. Yes, it's still going to complement the TV and drive people there, but we're going to have to do more to bring people in, whether it's user-generated content, show us what you're wearing, where you're watching from, those kind of things, as well as how can we provide some content in the stadium with restricted staff that's different to the broadcast, that gives the fans a little bit extra. So there's a lot of scope to do things, but there's a lot of restrictions around, I guess, the resourcing that most teams are going to have with, you know, in the NRL's case, they've got the COVID-19 restrictions, and there's only so many people allowed inside the what they're calling the bubble, which includes football staff and coaches and players. And most teams only have sort of one digital capture person, and the rest of the team are still working from home. So managing that and trying to deliver something with the fans' expectation hasn't changed. They still want the same stuff they got pre-COVID. So that's the pieces that's going to be different.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I mean, I've always been a fan, and when I'm doing things, is trying to kind of make people who aren't there feel part of it. And that's kind of ramped up to the next degree. That's, you know, because there is no one there, and you've got to generate something.
But it is like, it really puts a magnifying glass on that strategy of, let's talk to all these people in the stadium, whether it's a 30,000 seat stadium or 100,000 seat stadium. When you look back at it, it doesn't make any sense. Because there's more people outside the stadium. Like, there's more people at home. There's more people around the globe watching the sport. We really should always have been focused on them. So I think, you know, if we're looking for glass half full and, you know, some of the positives coming out of it, I think the focus on fans at home who aren't there, and that sort of shift of lens is going to be, you know, a big benefit to both fans, but then also just like overall digital strategy.
One of the things you've been doing is your sports biz Zoom calls. with some industry people looking at different areas, and yep. you're kind of 50 questions that you've got on your website, kind yep. of going through those type of things, which has been really interesting. And what kind of themes have come out of that from people who are obviously all around the world?
Yeah, it's sort of, it's grown organically, which is a great thing about the internet. It's just started as a, hey, we're all working from home. I've always been a solo practitioner and working either in my own office or from home. And so it was really just a, hey, let's get together, we're all in this. And it just became a bit of a general discussion of what we're all facing. Some of the stuff we're discussing around content and digital. There's been a lot of discussion around sponsorship and you know, what can we deliver sponsors? The to-ing and fro-ing of looking over the sponsorship contract. What are the deliverables? Which deliverables just vanished? And so the good thing about the calls is I've been running them both on a Tuesday night my time, which is about lunchtime for you in your part of the world, and then one on a Wednesday morning, which sort of crosses over with the US West Coast. And we've been getting a good mix of people from this part of the world and in Europe and South Africa, as well as US and Canada, and also people in different departments that don't normally talk to one another. You know, a lot of times I'll go in and I'll work with a digital department or sometimes the data team and help them sell tickets and then the commercial team, but there's a lot of silos there. And some of the conversations and different perspectives in these calls have been really good, having a digital person talk about what they're struggling with and what they're trying to do, as well as the pressures, and they are immense, of, you know, the sponsorship staff trying to deliver on what they've sold. And then they're also worried about what next year is going to look like, because not only have they got limited inventory and all those kind of things, you've got partners that are going through real, you know, financial concerns that they might just pull the plug on sponsorship. And then the, you know, some of the bigger issues the one we tackled last week was all about grassroots, right? So do kids come back to sport? What are the long-term effects of it? How's a local football club or a local cricket club going to operate with all of the admin that's going to be required for COVID, for safety and all of those kind of things? It's been a really good conversation. It's hard wrangling a Zoom call with 50 people on it at times. But we seem to have found a way to do it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I imagine it's great to see those kind of people collaborating. I think that's one of the themes that's definitely come out from people I've spoken to, is the fact they're collaborating more, not just internally, but with other teams and, you know, within the leagues and outside of that, and even with their partners, because they're all in this kind of same boat, the same situation, they're all going to have same struggles.
Oh, well, if we don't collaborate on in getting out of this, then we're really, truly stuffed. So, we really have to. And, you know, I've made the joke for, you know, over 10 years now, I'm a digital divorce counsellor. But if we can't get sponsorship and digital working together after this, then, all hope is lost for me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the other things that's also come out, which is one that you're heavily involved in, is obviously esports. Huge amount of emphasis on it, because obviously there's no sports to talk about, so everyone's lent on that. And you're a team owner.
Yes.
Which is a kind of rarity for the kind of sports industry.
Yeah, so there's Gravitas. It's a strange one, because it was like esports. I say esports is its own biggest hype man. So esports was getting a lot of publicity before COVID. But then obviously because it was able to continue. So as an example, our league was playing in a studio. It missed one broadcast day and was back the next week playing online, right? So there was hardly any disruption. The content kept going. And yes, the viewership numbers went up, but it didn't just mean, oh, the football's not on, cool, all the money's moving to esports, right? But it did give it a good bump in awareness, had some really good conversations with sponsors around what it looks like. And now more people know what it is. And know the opportunities are there, it's going to be interesting to see what that bounce back as the more traditional sports come back on, take those eyeballs back. Definitely an opportunity for more brands to understand what esports can offer, And I think it'll be effectively like everything. I think it'll accelerate that awareness. It was already on that way. I think now more people, both from a fan side, but more importantly, from my point of view, the sponsor side, there's more brands and agencies aware of what they can do in the space.
Mm. Do you think the leagues and the clubs and the sports themselves will carry on to take it seriously? Or was it literally, you know, we've got a gap that we need to plug. Let's use this and then let's get back to normal sports and put it back in its box.
I think the sports that have, like I always thought, a game that's adjacent to the sport, it makes sense to keep playing in that space. So football are going to continue playing FIFA. They'll continue doing fan activations and the players will still play. So there will be that crossover. It's natural. And the same with what NBA and 2K. I think motor racing is now deeply embedded with video games, you know, the success they had with iRacing and NASCAR. So I think that's a natural regression. That the sports that don't have that game, it's tougher to enter because you've got to be fully committed and you know have the funds and those kind of things. So you know, so when AFL or you know an NFL team with League of Legends, it's a tougher ask. But I think video games and the games that support, you know, the fact that football teams are still, you know, doing shirt reveals in FIFA and they're reaching a different market, that's gonna continue. And I think it just gives them more options now from a, you know, when we get back to game day of game day activations and what you can do in stadium and that kind of thing, that legitimizes it, makes that conversation with the executive a little bit easier. You know, when you say, hey, we want to do this thing with video games, and they go, oh, I don't get it. It's like, well, it did work. So we've had this sort of window of permission, and so we can now run with it.
Yeah, it's definitely been a kind of test time for a lot of those kind of content ideas and other ideas that have been sitting in the background, just not had yep. time to do. And, you know, hopefully the gaming side, as you say, will take serious. I think sim racing is huge. F1 are kind of committed into that and we're seeing more and more.
Yep.
And long-term ESPN, for example, picking up multi-year deal to kind of cover sim racing. Those are yep. fantastic. But, I mean, what do you see the benefit for a club or a league getting into esports? Because, you know, a lot of them, the original thought was, oh, you need to do this and then we can convert people from playing that because they're youngsters into coming over and becoming viewers or players in our games.
Yeah, I've always thought that's a flawed strategy. And even talking to some of the, you know, the NBA teams that have got NBA 2K franchises and, you know, soccer teams with FIFA teams, that's not the play. The play is to extend those sponsorship opportunities to that new demographic. If they come and become a fan, and again, those sport adjacent titles are very closely aligned anyway. You know, if you like football and watch football, you'll play FIFA, and the same for the NBA. But I think it can develop fans. But if that's your reason for going in, I think that's flawed because I think the opportunity is actually bigger to engage those fans where they are. On the platforms that they like to be on, so whether it's Twitch or Mixer. Those kind of things. I think that's where the opportunity lies, as well as ability to go, okay, you know, sponsor X, you're on our jersey here on the pitch, but then if we actually do these activations over here, it reaches a different demographic altogether. Mm. And to a certain degree, you're hedging your bets. If that age group ages up and continues following the esports and the gaming more than the real stuff, as we, you and I might call it, well, then you've got a, you know, a parallel business.
Where do you see things? There's a lot of conversation going on around what new social media will look like with the likes of Fortnite and say Animal Crossing. The fact they're yep. not just games, they're kind of, there's a big social element to them, and that's where the social networking will be in the future. Is that even on the horizon, even in the tiniest thoughts of anyone at the moment?
Yeah. I mean, Fortnite is a fascinating like marketing platform. You know, when you're seeing what they're doing in the music space, when you're seeing, you know, Nike drop Jordans in there and people buying them, and you know, there's no factories that need to produce those shoes; they're just pixels. So the licensing pieces that are there, you know, are fascinating. The publishers, you know, own. You know, have so much control over those platforms in the same way that, you know, Facebook and Amazon and Google do. So I do think that's where there will be, you know, a crossover. with and just, you know, treating them just like a platform, whether it's, you know, selling, seeing your jerseys in Animal Crossing, and, you know, it's another way. It's another digital face paint. As I've said before, you know, if you can say, hey, I'm a fan of Gravitas or Man U or Collingwood in your favorite environment, then there should be an opportunity there for sports.
I just wanted to finish off with as well, in one of your favorite topics around digital transformation.
Yep.
And do you see this time that, you know, we've kind of had this period of reset almost, is that going to speed up the digital transformation or is it going to slow things down? Do you think there'll be investment in it and new thoughts into it?
I think it's tough while we're in it. Like, you know, we're talking about this DC during COVID and post COVID. I actually think it will accelerate it. You know, I've had this goal, I think I stated a couple of years ago, I think digital will be the number one source of revenue for sports by 2030. I'm feeling much more comfortable about that statement now than I was, you know, 4 months ago, even though I still believed in it then. For those reasons we said before, like going after the global fan, going after the fan outside the stadium, the fact that sponsorship will actually have to work hand in hand with digital to get out of this. If they get out of it, then they'll have all the tools to really run it. So I think, you know, the jokes have been, you know, who fired digital transformation in the company. Most companies in the world are going to say COVID did it. So yeah, so I do think we'll come out a better, you know, the digital will be in a better space. I think there's going to be more focus on the costs of digital departments. I think initially we'll probably see shrinkage overall of just overall footprints of sports teams and leagues. And so we might start seeing some of that content be developed by agencies. Like there might be a shift of where the staff are. But I do think when things get back up and running, the foot will be firmly down to the ground on all things digital across all platforms. We're seeing, you know, broadcasts are changing. It's all going to be digital. And the fact we've also, you know, we've had 10 weeks of everyone getting better connected via digital means, like, you know, the what we're talking on now, Zoom is, I've done three versions since this pandemic's come out, and it's better than it was 6 weeks ago. So, like, people are going to be more used to conversing over digital platforms. I mean, I've been using meeting software for 10 years, and it's only in the last 2 months that I've turned the video camera on, right? It's normalized video calls. So there's all of these products and opportunities that are going to come out over the next 6 months of how do we better connect with fans? How do we get fans into the stadium? You know, if we can get this remote fan engagement piece right, like, and we're seeing, you know, Zoom calls into stadiums in, you know, in Europe and things like that. But if we get it right, well, then there's no reason to park it once the people are back in the stands. Like, there's nothing stopping us having another 50,000 or other 500,000 people going through that experience if that experience works. So that's where I think it's exciting. And then, you know, also, you know, there's plenty of stories to tell, and there's going to be now all these new mediums that are going to be available. So, yeah, I'm excited for what it's going to do for sport from a digital point of view. There's a bit of pain ahead, at least from all the conversation I'm having, there's a lot of passionate people moving in the right direction.
Yeah. Should be enough to keep us busy for the next few years, fingers crossed.
I'd hope so. I mean, if anything, we're at least built for this new world. Been banging on about digital and sport for long enough. I think we've done a long apprenticeship. We should be ready to reap the rewards.
Yeah. Fantastic. I think we managed to cram a huge amount into a short space of time there. Where can we find more information about the podcast and get involved with the Zoom calls?
If you Google Sports Geek, if you don't find me, I'm doing it wrong. SportsGeekHQ.com is all things Sports Geek. At Sean Callanan or at Sports Geek will find me. And all the details for the podcast, the Zoom calls, they're all on the Sports Geek website.
Cool. And I'll stick some links in the show notes as well.
Terrific, mate.
Thanks a lot, Sean. Always great talking to you.